ॐ ज्ञानेति मरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुर्नुतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टम् स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकृतामायं दधाति सपदन्तिकम् पञ्चकौपाथरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदे गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. So greetings from the Sun Falls, Stuyvesant Sun Falls. And, you know, since the retreat, I've gotten an opportunity to spend time up here in my place. It's so much easier to do studies and writing and business or whatever you have to do when you're in your own place. But yesterday, it was very interesting because Satyabharata's disciples rented the around-the-block local VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars place, which actually is a nice facility. And they had it outside, and I guess it was about Satyarup Maharaj's books. Jayadvaita Maharaj came, quite a few people came, and I was able, fortunate, to stop over there around lunchtime, and again, just before they were leaving, Ram Roy came up and did kirtan, and remarked to me before he was leaving so blissfully that, you know, it was such a relief to do kirtan in the presence of all these saintly souls as opposed to Union Square. So he was feeling very kind of enlivened. It was so nice. And I took lunch with Satyarup Maharaj and Jayadvaita Maharaj. It was really pleasant. Satyarup Maharaj was super blissful. He was so happy to see so many disciples, and people came from Florida. It was just a July 4th program. I just concentrating on his mission and books, but people came from Boston, from Florida, from Washington, D.C., from Pennsylvania, from Gitanagari. And when I walked in, it was just such a nice program. You know, like Ram Roy said, an assembly of saintly people. These are people, most of his disciples, I think, have been devotees for 35 years or something. So many of those people joined right after Prabhupada. So they're connected with Satyarup Maharaj, just so transparent to Prabhupada, right after Prabhupada left. And they're the ones that endured, you know, and so nice, actually. It was a wonderful program. And then the locals came over, Raghunath and his family, and Krishna Kumari and her family. And anyway, really nice program. And this little out-of-the-way hamlet sometimes has a lot of activity. Now, we're studying the Bhagavatam, and just to put it in context, we started the story of Maharaj Prickett, and it's really interesting because, you know, at the beginning, the sages of Ramisharanya ask about the history of the Bhagavatam. So they ask about how is Vyasa inspired, and that's like chapters like 5 and 6. And then they also asked about Sukadeva Goswami, and that's the beginning of chapter 7. Because he's interesting, because he had no attachments in the world. Now, I'm going to do something. I'm going to just put it into presentation mode and see if that affects how you hear. If not, just send me an email, okay? Okay, well, let me know if it's still good. So they asked, because that's so interesting, and they asked about Maharaj Prickett because he was great in his birth, his life, and his death. And it's hard to get any one of those down. But saying that, I was actually speaking with Jayadvaita Maharaj at the table, and we were mentioning about Karma Rupa and how glorious he left. And he worked with me for many, many years. And Jayadvaita Maharaj said, very interesting, he said, Krishna selected him. And, you know, it was interesting who Krishna will select. It's you can't put that to any designation, you know. I think there's a saying that someone will be remembered more for how they made people feel than what they've accomplished. So you can never tell how, what dictates. It's not going to be dictated by a committee who Krishna is going to glorify. And so it was really, it was wonderful. And Jayadvaita Maharaj said, because Karma Rupa took care of the cows, he said, the cows will decide who's glorified. The cows decided. Krishna's cows decided who was glorified. And, you know, it was just such a, it's real. And I know him. I know one thing about him is that he didn't have the mental plane. The mental plane is the period where you're hesitating, what is best for me? It's like getting up in the morning. Should I get right out of bed or should I stay a few more minutes? That's the mental plane. But I remember I was with Karma. When Karma Rupa would get up, when the time was for him to get up, he just like, no mental flame. And then I remember one story was really interesting too. We're on the third floor of the Gurukul building, and one of the kids came and said, there's a beast cobra in the corner bathroom. And at that time, we were convinced that it was the folklore that it was the most poisonous animal alive. And it's like 4 or 5 feet with legs. It looks like a cobra on legs. And it's so, I mean, it's terrifying, okay? And we heard, I don't know, that the folklore of Vrindavan is you have like 10 seconds to pass urine or you die or something, you know? It's like, and someone went into his room. And I remember they told him, and he just turned around, went in his room, and then came out with a Bowie knife wrapped around with like saffron cloth and just went into the bathroom. He just went into the bathroom, you know, and then came out with it. I mean, you know, whatever his duty is. And also, you know, in Vrindavan, there's these criminals where they try to go around with not at night with trucks. Just be a good service for you, Scott. There's a vigilante group that protects Vrindavan. From it. They go around with trucks, and they steal cows. They even busted into our Goshala and stole cows. Karma Rupa would stay up at night. He would split the night with his assistant. I think the assistant would stay up till 1, then he would get up at 1 o'clock. And he would be with his cows to protect them. And in a second, he would give up his life if that was his duty. He wouldn't hesitate a half a second. So it's nice, just the quality of honesty. You know, the quality of honesty. It just goes so far. I know what is right. And whatever I know is right, I will do. problem is that we know it's right, we don't do it. I know it is right, I will do it. And then there's people, I know it is right, I will die for it. So, Krishna protects his devotees. And when the signs were that he was to leave, immediately, he was ready. With that realization that this is what Krishna wants. And you have to live a life like that to have that kind of courage. So, now we're in the third part of the story. So we're saying tells about Maharaj Prickett. So he's glorious in his birth. His birth is being described now. But the interesting thing is when they tell us about Maharaj Prickett, it's really telling you about Krishna. Because Krishna was, especially his birth, Krishna was there at his birth to protect him. That's why he's Prickett. Because Krishna came in the womb to protect him from the Brahmastra weapon, and therefore Prickett means examiner. So he was able to actually see Krishna, and that made a samskara on him, an impression. An impression is an attachment or aversion that you seek to fulfill or avoid from an experience you have. You know, you have, you have a bad experience with men, and then you avoid them irrationally. If you have a bad experience with women, you avoid them irrationally. Or whatever it is. Or you like to eat, you eat regardless of what it does to your body. So there's strong impressions. And with children who are impressionable, the impressions have to be Krishna. So therefore children generally, they learn by imitating the parents. So they see the parents spiritual, then generally that makes an impression on them. And that's what samskaras are. There's samskaras, garbhagan samskar and all the samskaras. They make impressions that this is good. The impression may be the kid is learning to write, and then all the parents and everybody jive when he writes the first letter of the Sanskrit alphabet. But the impression in his is, wow, learning is good. Right? Where, you know, if his father's a high school dropout, and, you know, there's no books in the house, and all he has is guns and beer, then that's the impression the child will. This is good. See, he had the most strong impression, and therefore, when you have impressions, let's say you have something that you enjoy, you'll work to fulfill it for the rest of your life, unless you get rid of that samskar. So the unfortunate thing in modern age is you get attraction to things that are bad that will cause you distress. They'll give you pleasure but degrade your consciousness into anxiety and depression. So you may have attachment for drugs, you may have attachment for illicit sex, you may have attachment for so many things, for control, for bullying, so many things. So it's really the samskaras. And of course, They Govardhan Samskar itself attracts souls. That's the before there's conception of a child. Before there's a conception of a child, there's Michael, I feel the same way yesterday from the Govinda's sandwiches that they serve there. And the oatmeal in the morning. I'm also so really what happens is a very beautiful thing. They're asking about the history of the Bhagavatam and asking about the birth of this great personality, then we see Krishna. And once we see Krishna, then we'll follow him for the rest of the first canto. Because Krishna is also so intimately connected with his death. Because his death is glorious because the Bhagavatam was spoken. And the Bhagavatam is Krishna, where Krishna is manifest after he left the planet. So, you have to follow Krishna leaving the planet. You follow Krishna leaving the planet. That's Maharaj Prickett's death. Krishna leaves, then Krishna manifests in the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Prickett is cursed. So here we know the Brahmastra weapon, the atomic smart bombs launched by weapons, and Ashwatthama, and then Arjuna, he counteracts the first one. And then, he actually, his children were killed, and he's ready to kill them. And he's Arjuna, he's an Atirata. There's Maharatas, they can fight with 1,000, and there's Atiratas. Atiratas mean they can fight with an unlimited amount of people. I'm speaking a lot of military stuff now because Scott is here. I mean, he'll be very attentive if we talk about war. And Atirata has mantra weapons. They can like devastate so many things. But Ashwatthama, because he's Dvija Bandhu, he's born in the position. So he has powers, but he doesn't have culture. And that's where Kali Yuga actually enters. They really enter with Maharaj Sringi, the son of Shyamaka Rishi, who curses Maharaj Prickett to die. He has power due to his seminal secession, but he doesn't have culture. And that's when everything gets screwed up, when you have power without culture. Therefore, Kshatriyas really had culture. They just weren't skinheads. Now I got a fear for my life when I go to New York, but I don't think anybody's listening. They're so noble. They're so noble. They have culture. It's like someone who has a debilitated Mars in their chart. They're aggressive without control. And someone has an exalted Mars, they're powerful, but with strategy. They know when to use it. So now you have power, and you don't have culture, and you don't have control. It becomes abused. And what is the modern world? The Bhagavatam always tries to show that there are leaders, that they have power, but they have no knowledge. They have no culture. And more or less, they have no culture. And if they do, they just don't extend it to the animals. So there's still reaction. So what Prabhupada was trying to do is create a class of Brahmins to give people, he wasn't so much as concerned with the power as he was with the culture to add to the power that already exists. Power already exists, but people don't have culture. They don't have knowledge on how to use it. One time Srila Prabhupada was asked, I think maybe by Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I'm not sure, said, Prabhupada, you should be the, king of the world. Prabhupada said, you manage, I'll advise. So he counteracts it, Arjuna. And he throws it, he knows how to counteract it. And now he captures Ashwatthama, and he's furious. He killed his children. He's bringing him back to Draupadi, because he promised. Now, Dharma is very, very interesting. Now, I give these classes called, I gave a class, I spoke in Woodstock. It's actually nice. I described like 15, 20 years, I had to hustle to get some programs here and there, Who knew you outside? But now people are inviting me. So I was invited, very nice people, two lawyers in Woodstock, and I met in Vrindavan. Set up a program, and it was Michael was there. Besides Michael, I was the youngest one there. So the one guy was going to die on the seat, you know, that guy, you know. And it was, no, I don't know, I probably was a little, definitely no one was under 55, that's for sure. But I spoke about forgiveness overcoming justified hate. I had a point there. What was my last point? What? Tetropity, yeah. Yeah, oh yeah. Right, thank you. So I was discussing about forgiveness. I was making the case for forgiveness. So I described what it is, why it should be done when it's appropriate. You know, so the question was, should it be unilateral at the earliest moment? Like in Charleston, the church there, where people were, you know, immediately. Or the Amish, their children were killed. They said, I forgive you. Let's say, well, take care of your wife. What do you think, Scott? Is that Dharma or a little moral outrage? It's a tough one, but what is Dharma? I mean, I didn't argue for immediately. I said, let's leave that open. I'm just going to describe why you should do it at the earliest appropriate moment. You know what I'm saying? But I don't want to discount the moral outrage that comes from love of a mother for her children or something like that, you know, or discount. But so Dharma. So now what the question is going to be now what to do. And Arjuna is so angry, and so is Krishna. They both want to kill him. Then there's going to be a discussion. What is Dharma? You know, it's because you can't, when you say Dharma, the appropriate action, you have to take into account the circumstance. And the circumstances can be complex. Like, for example, someone does something wrong, but he's mentally deranged, you know, or they were mistreated before in a way. You know, there's circumstances. So it's not, you know, like when a judge gives the sentence, you know, a murder may be there, but not everybody gets hung, you know, not, you know, some people... what is it called? Voluntary manslaughter. They may be, you know, there's Dharma. What is the right thing? And it becomes complex on every level. And now when you talk about the Vedic culture, then you have someone who's the son of their guru. So what is their responsibility there? The whole Bhagavad Gita. Okay, you're fighting the war, but your family's on the other side. I remember when I went to this class in 1970. In Valencia Street in San Francisco. And Prabhupada was there. And I went to the Ratha Yatra. Actually, it was in 74, I think. 74. I went to the Ratha Yatra. So I'm just going to the class. And Vidyananda Maharaj was giving the class. And he was always angry. He was like a fired up preacher, but he was always angry. So he said, and I'm just sitting there, I was like, yeah, and I remember this, he said, in the Bible, the highest principle is honor thy mother and father. And the first thing Krishna says to Arjuna is kill your parents. you know, so... Which is it? You know, his family was on the other side. So there are subtleties. And Shastra is to give you clarification. Because Dharma will elevate you. So you have to have the right action appropriate to the circumstance. And it's complex. I just gave this example. I don't want to get into controversy now, but I'll just say it another way. I was writing to someone this story of Nikita Khrushchev. Nikita Khrushchev was the president of Russia when we grew up. And Ramaswamy was telling about that too. We had our Sadhu Sangha, which was our Bhakti Immersion, which was phenomenally wonderful. So I forgot what he was giving some class, but when we grew up, we have air raid drills in the classes. You know, and we have to go under the desks in the classes. We had air raid drills in the classes. And we were always afraid of the war. In fact, I was in a drama about the Monroe Doctrine. You know what the Monroe Doctrine is? That the U.S. has jurisdiction to protect itself anywhere in the Western Hemisphere. So Russia was sending missiles into Cuba. And the U.S. blockaded Cuba. They blockaded Cuba and stopped the Russian trips. And everyone was afraid this would start the World War. They weren't going to let them place missiles in Cuba directed at America. Forget it. So the premier of Russia at the time was Nikita Khrushchev. And he came to the UN and gave a speech. He took his shoe off and banged it on the podium, addressing the assembly, looked at the U.S. ambassador, which is named Adlai Stevenson, and said, "We will bury you." So what happened is he had a son. And his son, you know, after, you know, he died or something, his son went to Brown University and he became a professor, and then he became a professor and then he got U.S. citizenship. And when he got U.S. citizenship, the first question the reporter asked him was, first question he asked is, "What will your father think about this?" And Boris John told me this. His answer was brilliant. You can't judge one era from another. So Dharma has to be applied according to the circumstance and time. And it becomes very, very complex because there's completely different circumstances. So you have to extract the principles of Dharma and apply them in a modern context. It doesn't mean you compromise the tradition. Tradition is molding your values by the past, and liberality is molding them according to the circumstances of the future. And you know, both are required. You know, you have to have a strong, you have to be strongly rooted in tradition, and you have to sometimes appropriately mold it to this present circumstance. So Bhurichand Prabhu asked that to Prabhupada. He said there are details and principles. How can you tell the difference? It's sometimes very subtle. And Prabhupada's answer was, it takes some intelligence. So, and when you're just a folio scholar, I mean, the whole purpose of reading Shastra is to look at it from different angles, study it, and I see the people who actually read Shastra, they're not conservative, they're not liberal. Because it doesn't conform to the modes what the truth is. Yeah, they understand the I see that. They understand the principles. And you can't say they're liberal, you can't say they're conservative. Just like you can't say that about Prabhupada. When Prabhupada put, you know, women priests, conservative would never do that. He let women in the ashram. You know, conservative never do that. But Prabhupada was also strict also. Remember someone said you have to eat with knives and spoons and forks. But I make them throw away their spoons and forks. He wasn't conceived. One time they said to Prabhupada, you're very conceived. He said, how can I be conservative? I let women into the ashram. But he also wasn't politically correct. I remember I just quoted it. It kind of blew my mind when there was some kind of Cambodia or something. Prabhupada said if the president of the United States became Krishna conscious, he would say, if you harm one hair on the head of our man, there'll be fight. you can't box one in who knows Shastra. Because they know the principles, and therefore they're not going to be easily swayed by political correctness and so many other values that come, and they're not going to be stuck in archaic forms that don't fit the times that they're in. So and therefore, in Prabhupada's movement, there are conservatives and there are liberals. The conservatives take his conservative statements, and the liberals take his liberal statements. And those who read Shastra, they make independent judgments based on the Shastra applied intelligence to the circumstance. And here, in this whole thing, they're trying to find the circumstance. Because he did such a heinous thing. He's a Brahmin. Why should he be treated by a Brahmin? But at the same time, he's the son of their guru. And, they're also compassionate to his mother, the wife of his guru, who will suffer if her son is, slaughtered. But here, they're both angry, but it's described that the anger is so different. And it's seen in the color of the eyes. Arjuna's was red, and Krishna's was like white, like lotuses. So, Krishna's transcendental. His anger does not come from false ego. His anger comes completely from love and relationship to his devotees. Not under the modes. It's a whole different quality. It doesn't consume you in the same way. It's something that you use. I remember one time, I forgot what it was, but it was in front of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. I think some hippie, girl, this is about 25 years ago, wanted to walk into the temple with shoes. I said, no, you can't walk. I forgot what it was, but she was very sassy, And just, it really took me to call in English lip. And I was getting angry, but I was watching the anger. Because she was so disrespectful to the deities, really. And then I just said, okay, the anger should be used in Krishna's service. I let it go. I was angry. In a word. But it was somehow, I was thinking, observing. I was angry, but I used the anger in Krishna's service, and it was my choice. But once I was angry, it was real anger. So, I guess Arjuna, but Krishna is transcendental. Whatever he does is love. Because his anger also benefits people. And the object of his anger is blessed. We should read at least one more verse. Lord Sri Krishna said to Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of a Brahmin, Brahma Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in his sleep. The word Brahma Bandhu is significant. Person has to take birth in the family of a Brahmin, but is not qualified to be called a Brahmin, is dressed as the relative of a Brahmin and not a Brahmin. Brahma Bandhu, they're the son of a high court judge is not virtually a high court judge, but there is no harm in addressing a high court judge's son as the relative of an honorable justice. Therefore, as by birth, one does not become a high court judge, so also one does not become a Brahmin simply by birthright, but by acquiring the necessary qualifications of a Brahmin. As the high court judgeship is a post for the qualified man, so also the post of a Brahmin is attainable by qualification only. The Shastra enjoins that even if good qualifications are seen in a person born in a family other than a Brahmin, the qualified man has to be accepted as a Brahmin. And similarly, if a person born in the family of a Brahmin is void of rabbinical qualification, then he must be treated as a non-Brahmin, or in better terms, the relative of a Brahmin. Lord Krishna, the supreme authority of all religious principles, the Vedas, has personally pointed out these differences, and he's about to explain the reason for this in the following shlokas. So he'll explain that it's guna karma. Guna karma. It's your work, the qualities you have that ultimately designate you. But at the same time, we don't discount the influence of birth. Bhagavad Gita says, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashta Bajayate. That a fallen yogi gets born as a Brahmin. Suchinam Srimate, or an aristocracy, to complete. So there is something about birth, but it's not the absolute qualifying factor. But it is important. It's not the absolute qualifying factor. Just an interesting story with Tamal Krishnamaraj. I went to Dallas, and he brought me to someone's house. I think her name was Draupadi. She was a very, very excellent cook. And they'd make these Gujarati chapatis. And somehow you make these two chapatis together, and then you can like peel one from the other, and they're paper thin. They're paper thin. And they're so good. So I was with Tamal Krishnamaraj. I said, oh, Maharaj, maybe I should have some of my disciples come there and learn how to cook this. He looked at me and said, look, it's not Janma, it's not Guna Karma, it's Janma. He said, you can't learn this, you have to be born in a Gujarati family. it's not Guna Karma, it's Janma. But it is something. But ultimately, especially today, you know, karma is not fixed today. We're all mixed. Previously, people were born in particular castes, and they had similar, they had like particular qualities. Today, we're vana sankara. It means we're mixed. So you have people like our brahminical nature and their business, you know, like this. And, you know, such, it's all mixed. It's not easily to define. But the principle is there. Ultimately, it's the qualities. Okay, we're going to stop there for today. Are there any questions? Could I hear a voice saying that you heard the class and I just...
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
Gail. This is Gail.
Okay, Gail. Okay, all right, Krishna, Gail. Any questions?
I was in a bad place, so I didn't hear the answer to... When someone had asked, how do you know the difference between following a principle and following the details, what was the answer to that question?
To Prabhupada? Prabhupada said it takes intelligence.
Oh, okay.
It takes.
Okay.
Yes. Bhujan also found it amusing. It takes intelligence. Okay.
Okay. Thank
anybody
you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, obeisances, it's Hanan and Surit.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Good.
I have a question, Maharaj.
Please, if you have a question, go ahead.
I found it very interesting when you spoke about samskars. What exactly is the relationship with the...
Say it again, what's the question? Say it again.
Yes. Talk about prescience, about stars.
I can't hear you. Repeat it one more time.
You spoke about samskaras, impressions, and I was wondering how is it connected with what we know from the nectar of devotion, of the kutam and bijam, the more subtle reactions when we do simple activities.
Is that
the same?
That discusses yeah, I guess that discusses the reactions, karmic reactions, right? In the kutam and the bijam. And the kutam is more like the proclivity. So, that may be a samskara. It's not the only samskara because that comes from the past life. The kutam may be like samskara from your past life. Yes. So, it's a category of samskaras. Okay?
So our samskaras are some reaction to our karma? Is that the
and
right
ones we
way
recreate
to
say? In this, samskara means a cluster of similar desires that are create an impulse in us. So that can come from past life, and that would be kutam, or it could be in the this life you can create it. So samskara is the general term, and I think kutam would be a type of samskara. Okay?
Okay. Yeah. I have one more small question, Maharaj. Where can we find your Nectar of Devotion classes you give in the Bhakti Center?
You send me an email, and I'll send it to the facilitator, and it will give you access. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? One more person?
Maharaj had a comment.
Yes.
You know, it's just really wonderful to hear you so laughing and jovial. You really are in a good mood.
Thank you. It's funny that you say that I'm kind of laughing and jovial and I'm in a good mood. Physically, I feel terrible, but because things are so hard to digest. I feel like soreness in all my bones, but maybe when I give class, I become enthusiastic. So thank you. I forget everything when I give class. Thank you, Henry. Okay. Thanks a lot. Anybody else? Okay, Vanchukopra Kurugis.